Welcome back, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Elite Medical School.
Yes, with me.
What's up, guys? How you been? How's it been hanging?
Just had an overnight shift, man, but I'm feeling fired up about, I'm feeling hyperthyroidemic.
Hyperthyroidemia.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's great, and very apropos of our discussion for today, which is, I think, thyroid disorders more generally. Very, very common, particularly in the naturopathic sciences of physical sciences. You'll run into a lot of thyroid issues and adrenal issues. But in fact, it is a common modifiable complaint and high yield for examination purposes. So why don't we just get right into it? Just jump in feet first, hit the ground running.
Oh yeah.
What shall we start with? Do you want to start with hypothyroidism?
Yeah, I would say that's probably a little bit more high yield. So let's go right into that one. So hypothyroidism, this is a diagnosis that is based entirely on lab values, although, you know, we typically think of a variety of symptoms that are associated with this illness. There's a couple subtypes. We have our overt versus our subclinical subtypes. Thinking back to our, our hypothalamic pituitary thyroid axis, we have our TRH, our TSH releasing hormone that's released from the hypothalamus, which then results in TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, released from the anterior pituitary, which acts on the thyroid in order to release our thyroid hormones. And we have a feedback loop associated with this axis that such that if there is low thyroid hormones, T3, T4, this will result in an elevated TSH. So whenever we're suspecting hypothyroidism, TSH is going to be our first test here. And we would be anticipating an elevated TSH with the hypothyroidism.
Is there an exception to that rule?
I guess in terms of if we're thinking central hypothyroidism, like if there's a hypothalamic or pituitary issue where we're thinking like trauma or malignancy, then that would lead to a low TSH, and we essentially get like secondary hypothyroidism. That's more of a rare cause, but certainly something that clinically, rather than using TSH as a marker of our diagnosis and treatment, we will be trending our T4 instead. Which, speaking of which, if getting back to the subtypes, so we're suspecting hypothyroidism, we see TSH is elevated. If afterwards we measure our free T4 and see that that is low, then this is overt hypothyroidism. We know that the actual acting thyroid hormone is not doing its job in the body. But otherwise, if the T4 level is normal, then this can be considered subclinical hypothyroidism.
Right. I think that was a super useful overview. And from the top, we had mentioned about this being a quite a common occurrence. You know, even up to 5% the all comers, and closer to 10% of women, especially over the age of 50. Will be affected. So 10% at some point in their lifetime. The other feature is probably more common in more petite folks or those who have a history of premature birth. So those are a higher risk population. There is a familial component. It's not super strong, but there is a familial component as well. In terms of various etiologies, do we want to endeavor to explain some of those?
Right. So I guess the most common etiologies will vary based on where you are in the world. You know, I know there's some areas of the world that are in a bit of disarray right now because we're a week overdue for uploading this podcast, and that this has resulted in some some, you know, issues in the Gaza Strip, West Bank. Some
geopolitical instability.
Yeah, and we really apologize for that, guys. So as a special cultural episode, we will...
We will be circumcising Dr. P.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Maybe have a circumcision.
And my banjo cord is going to be donated to somebody that needs an ACL.
Fresh banjo cord, live donor banjo cord.
Yeah. So we're a philanthropic bunch here. So anyway, worldwide, the most common cause of hypothyroidism would be iodine deficiency, so lack of iodine in our diet. I think worldwide, it's the number one cause of preventable intellectual disability.
Mm.
Yeah,
cretinism.
Exactly.
You damn cretin. Yeah. I don't think that's a sensitive term anymore, by the way, so let's try to avoid that. But yeah, congenital hypothyroidism.
Yeah. Yeah. Thankfully, we fortify our table salt with iodine in our region.
Not if it's kosher.
Oh, really, eh?
Yeah, so just bring awareness to that.
And then, speaking of cretinism, do we... maybe want to jump into the what features they have. Does anybody know a good mnemonic?
I don't. I'm fascinated. Oh. I have bated breath waiting to find out what that is.
Yeah. So it's called the six P's is what I've seen. So we're thinking pale, that pallor, pot belly. It's going to be a puffy faced child who will have a protuberant tongue, as well as a protruding umbilicus. And the last P is for poor brain development.
Yeah, no, that's useful. No, I like that. And that's good for exam purposes. Okay, so that's sort of cretinism. And like you point out, probably or is the most common cause internationally of hypothyroidism. In North America, probably the most common cause is Hashimoto's, which is a chronic autoimmune thyroiditis, and is more common, at least twofold, 2 to 7-fold, quite a range, more common in women. And it pathologically, it's like a lymphocytic infiltrate into the thyroid. In the acute phase, like any thyroiditis, there can be increased T4 secretion. Whereas in the subacute and chronic phase, there's actually tissue necrosis or loss of secreting cells. And therefore, there tends to be a chronic hypothyroidism after this acute inflammation. The more common in women in sort of their 20s and later, very uncommon prepubescent. So not a high index of suspicion there. Other relevant important causes for testing purposes as well. Medications. Okay. So, lithium, amiodarone, and iodine, radioactive iodine, we obviously would ablate it. But amiodarone and lithium, are the two medications where you do routinely monitor, thyroid function. So very, very relevant for our psychiatry colleagues and cardiology colleagues as well. So I think that's an outline of probably the most common causes of, again, primary hypothyroidism, which represent more than 90% of cases. In terms of central, we already referred to this, which is pituitary and hypothalamus. Pituitary damage, trauma would be the most common cause. The other one that people like to pimp students on is Sheehan syndrome, which is a scene in related to exsanguination or hemorrhagic, let's say postpartum hemorrhage, bleeding around pregnancy or around childbirth, I should say, which results in pituitary necrosis. So panhypopit, as they say, or panhypopituitary. Sheehan syndrome is something probably worth remembering. It's come up not infrequently. It can come up on gynae boards as well. And then any infiltrative process like TB, sarcoid, you spoke about cancers previously. So that's a good outline of various etiologies.
Yeah, I would say also commonly, this is something Dr. P experienced when he was in the hospital last month, self-limited thyroiditis when there is basically some sort of stress on the body. There's tons of etiologies for this. Basically, the way thyroiditis typically runs, there's a hyperthyroid phase, typically brought on by that inflammation. Then this results in this follicular phase of thyroid hormone release. Then the supply basically runs out and you're in the hypothyroid state, and then it can return to a euthyroid state after that. Some people can stay hypothyroid, but oftentimes it returns to normal. And all sorts of things can cause this, infections, postpartum, radiation, meds, anything that irritates the thyroid. It needs to recalibrate itself afterwards is kind of how I think of it. Some people may need thyroid therapy, and some people may need it long term, but I've found oftentimes on the wards where if for whatever reason we're looking for work to do, we're testing everyone's thyroids.
Right. Yeah, that's helpful. Maybe relatedly, and we'll get into it a little bit later, but even old age, can have, there's some natural changes in hormonal, thyroid hormone profile that we tolerate, and that won't sort of self-correct. Okay. So that was useful. And I think I just neglected a couple of items in terms of risk factors, epidemiology. So it clusters with other autoimmune illnesses such as, type 1 diabetes, adrenal insufficiency. Don't tell the fucking naturopaths, celiac, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, et cetera. So that's important and useful. And remember, depression and other psychiatric illness.
Let's just, we should go through all of them because it's tested constantly.
Perfect.
Yeah. Speaking of the naturopaths, one of the main, I guess in terms of all of the signs and symptoms, you will want to be conceptualizing this as the body is slowed down metabolically. So, generally, maybe Dr. P, do you have a stab at maybe some of the common symptoms that people would experience?
Yeah. Constipation.
Oh yeah.
Is constipation would be one that I have a lot. I don't think I'm hypothyroidic, but I'm definitely constipated. Weight gain.
Ejaculatory velocity.
Tiredness. Ejaculatory delay. Depression. Erectile dysfunction. Slow heart rate.
Good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I feel like a poor ability to tolerate cold as well.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, and unintentional weight gain. So there are numerous, but if I think highlighting unintentional weight gain,
fatigue,
constipation, and cold intolerance, that's sort of your classical patient presentation. Some other features is if it's severe, like myxedema, like very, very severe, they can present with a CHF like picture. And I've seen that before. Carpal tunnel is something that should trigger you to consider, especially in the unlikely patient. Menorrhagia, big one. changes in menses, menstrual irregularity, menorrhagia. Queen Anne's, I believe, sign is thinning of the lateral third. And it's funny because, you know, it sounds like it's a silly little trivial issue, but you actually see that not infrequently, and alopecia otherwise, but this thinning, you know, you can think of your obese patient that has thinning of the lateral eyebrows. They are not unlikely to have hypothyroidism. And on blood work, anemia can be a soft marker as well. We should mention also like goiter, and that's relevant for, you know, obviously for the exam. You want to do a full thyroid exam. I should say for an OSCE type scenario, you want to do a full thyroid, exam. Yeah. Yeah.
I would also mention, a bit less, specific symptoms, but common ones as well, with that alopecia is dry skin, as well as things like, brittle nails. And, some people may even have periorbital edema. Those complaints are common, I find, like the dry skin especially. And with the cardiac, we mentioned bradycardia. Diastolic hypertension is also another feature, potentially. In terms of... actually, do you mind if I just jump ahead to lab abnormalities here?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
Yeah. So a couple features that we might see are anemia, hyponatremia, as well as... there's a predisposition to hypercholesterolemia.
Right.
The way that I think of it is that your cholesterol metabolism is slowed, but ultimately it's a decreased LDL receptor expression. So because of this, there is an association with cardiovascular disease. And for this reason, this is basically enough reason to start treatment, even if there are no symptoms. And if somebody is subclinical, I've heard the threshold of a TSH of above 10, that they should be treated even if their hypothyroidism is subclinical.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And from a cardiac perspective. Yeah, definitely. Okay.
You just said subclinical hypothyroidism should be treated.
Yes.
Yeah.
Should be.
Yeah. So if they're asymptomatic, which means subclinical.
Well, no, subclinical. I think is if their T4 is normal, but usually subclinical. Yeah, like, you know, I don't mean to be pedantic, but typically that means that they won't have symptoms. But that's the distinction.
Wikipedia says that there's no evidence the benefit of treating subclinical hypothyroidism is in those who are not pregnant.
Yeah, but this is if they have their TSH is significantly elevated.
Sorry.
So subclinical hypothyroidism, it by definition technically is a TSH in my view, and I don't have specific. Sorry, so then I shouldn't say by definition. And again, let's not be overly pedantic here, but subclinical hypothyroidism is a borderline elevated TSH that is less than 6 with minimal symptoms. Evidently, if my understanding here would be normal T4 with TSH greater than 10, you still would be inclined to treat. Is that your interpretation?
Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds good to me. Let's not get caught in the weeds here.
That's good. No, and I think it's useful. I mean, if we're getting tripped up on that, being people that have some practical experience, it's useful for folks to watch it for these pitfalls. So anyhow, in terms of we jumped ahead to some blood work investigations. Any other? So we're starting with a TSH normally. If that's borderline, you can consider your free T4. T3 is rarely indicated. It's useful if you're worried about thyrotoxicosis or more acute inflammatory states. It's expensive usually and often has to be done at a tertiary center. So just be aware that there's lots of delay there. Finally, consider the value of antibodies. Anti-TPO is common in Hashimoto's, and also thyrotropin receptor antibody, the TRAb antibody, is in Graves, and there can be in some cases actually a post-Graves hypothyroidism, but let's not get into that too much. Okay, and otherwise, the risk stratification, like you spoke about, looking at lipids, perhaps looking at sugar, looking at your CBC, those can all be relevant when doing your blood testing there. Okay, so how shall we proceed at this point? We've done our blood work. Let's say that this cretin-like feature, sort of a Dr. P-like character, sort of diminutive skull hypoplasia, very small head circumference, micropenis, although that's not directly related to the thyroid, presents, and yeah, the TSH is super, super elevated. How are we going to treat this gentleman?
So really, there's only one medication to really remember here. If there's anything to take away, levothyroxine is our medication to basically replace the thyroid that's missing. Starting dose in your ambulatory setting, typically 50 micrograms daily, which if you're considering more of an elderly patient or somebody with cardiac disease, somebody with a high risk for adverse events or delirium, then maybe you will want to try a lower dose, maybe 25 to 50 micrograms daily. And with that medication initiation, or after any change in their medication, you will want to repeat their TSH in about a month, 6 weeks or so. And you will be titrating this dose to normalize their TSH and improve their symptoms. So they should start feeling a little bit more tolerant to cold with this medication.
Yeah. So, and I would agree, starting around 50 microgram, titrating, you know, on, you'll develop a little bit of your own, approach, but on the order of even 25 microgram, I normally would change it, every 6 weeks. We quote people that it would take the TSH to respond to a dose change, approximately 6 to 12 weeks. So I usually will make a change with blood work, every 6 week. I tend to go slow-ish because these folks have usually had hypothyroidism for some time, when they present. So there isn't a huge rush, and there are risks of over-replacements, such as arrhythmias, like triggering, atrial fibrillation, anxiety, et cetera. So we want to be fairly careful there. Like you point out, there really is, practically speaking, it's the one, bioidentical hormone, which is so cool. I mean, it's one of the cures in medicine, which is awesome. A very, very brief clinical vignette. I actually had a colleague in medical school who identified myxedema coma, which is a hypothyroidism coma, in a patient who had been in the ICU for weeks without anyone. I guess it sort of speaks to the incompetence of where I trained, but anyhow, without anyone identifying that, and brought this person, you know, back to life. So pretty cool. It was remarkable. So, and it was a med student too. So one of the cures in medicine, which is really neat, bioidentical hormone. There are some people, I think they use, basically a thyroid distillation, which is it's called desiccated thyroid, and I don't know if it's from a pig or some shit like that.
That's so old school, man.
Yeah, no, you'll encounter it though. I've encountered it.
Really?
Yeah. So it's there's certain people that like that. Yes.
Don't they just grind up like farmhouse animal thyroids and?
I don't know. I think it's probably considered like a nutraceutical, but yeah, no, I've encountered it and probably, you know, a naturopath picks up some like borderline hypothyroidism and starts a patient on it. So right. Anyhow, be aware of that. But yeah, practically speaking, it's Synthroid.
And St. John's wort.
St. John's wort. Yeah. That's a cure-all and a little bit of topical CBD.
Yeah.
Of
course. CBD mixed well with everything.
It's sort of a panacea.
Yeah.
We're moving into the age of CBD medicine. Well, you, Dr. P, you were saying that you were using it, to help with your jelking, regimen. Is that right?
Oh, it's like a lotion?
Well, it's like, cause you need, when you jelk, you need a lubricant, right? So I'm using a CBD based lubricant that I've been seeing some good gains. I got 0.018 inches in the last 7 months. So
that's not bad at all.
Yeah. Wow. We're going fast.
Yeah, keep at it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Follow us on Twitter at Elite Medical School Twitter for progress pics. We'll be updating daily.
Daily.
we'll be updating each hour with my progress.
Well, I'm going to be live streaming my jelking progress.
Yeah.
0.01 inch per 6 months. The other patient population, and consult your local guidelines, and I mean that, unfortunately, this is not, I don't think there's sort of consensus here, but that is pregnancy. So there are a lot of people, and I actually do it myself, who will screen for hypothyroidism with first trimester blood work. It's actually not on our local guidelines, but I do it. The goal normally is to see a TSH less than 2.5, and there are local guidelines for that, but that changes or is different regionally, and I'm not sure if that's because of, you know, different ethnic groups or whatever it may be. So consult your local guidelines, and if you have any questions, talk to your endocrinologist. There can be significant, you know, implications in neurologic development. So this isn't something that you want to, have a child born with cretinism like Dr. P because of your negligence. So start off with that TSH, hopefully less than 2.5. If you do need to replace thyroid demands change fairly rapidly within pregnancy, sort of even every 4 to 6 weeks of gestational age. So usually working, especially if there's anything complex with your endocrinologist, to optimize and stabilize TSH with repeat blood work during the pregnancy can be useful. And then postpartum, obviously you'll likely need to return to a lower baseline dose. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was good. I think that was a good, good outline of hypothyroidism. So here we are. I think our time is, I think that was sort of a good duration. Would you guys tend to agree? Do you want to skip hyperthyroidism?
Yeah. We can save it for next week.
So, I mean, in summary, again, thank you, Dr. P, for being a standardized patient and a great case report of severe cretinism. And we appreciate your advocacy for a more politically correct use of that term, which is congenital hypothyroidism. So I think that this has been a useful outline of management of hypothyroidism and very high yield for testing purposes. And if you want more where that came from, go to our episode list, guys. Check it out. Check out the backlog. Listen to this four times before your exam, and just absorb it. Just get it ingrained into your head. Maybe, you know, at some point we'll add some supplemental study notes, but this is where the learning happens.
Yeah. Okay? And tell all your friends how helpful it is too.
Tell your mom.
Yeah.
Tell your mom to call me.
Tell your cat. Tell your dog.
Yeah. Spread the word.
Oh yeah. And leave a review. You leave it running like while you sleep to absorb the information as well. That's kind of like a life hack for you, an elite medical school life hack.
Yeah, also send us your credit card number and your social insurance number as well.